Welcome to the Chlorine King Podcast, where your host, Eric Taylor, will discuss tips for the do-it-yourselfer, answer listeners' questions, conduct product reviews, and host special guests from the pool industry. Grab your swimsuits and let's dive in.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Chlorine King Podcast. I'm sure you guys have been waiting for us to launch another episode, and I apologize for the wait, but a lot's been going on. I'm officially taken. I got married back in early November, so November 4th, actually, to be exact, and went on a honeymoon for a couple weeks, so obviously there's no recording during that time, but then also came back and started doing some equipment training and a lot of courses and classes to become a better pool professional, and then also was buttoning up the training for my employee. So just a lot of stuff going on. I've had really time to spend, you know, on social media, but now that time's freeing up and I had a little bit of a holiday here, Thanksgiving, I decided I would go ahead and launch another episode for the chemical series that we started. So stay tuned and we'll go ahead and get started with that. But before we get there, you know, as always, we always have a question. And I've actually had a lot of questions since I haven't been doing many podcasts lately. So I'm going to go ahead and pick this one from Jake. He asked, Eric, where's the science behind the variable speed pump saving you money? What actually saves the money? Well, Jake, that's a great question. And not a lot of people truly understand what's going on. They're like, oh, I just run my pump at a lower speed and I save money. You're half right. So let's go ahead and get into this. There's two ways that a variable speed pump saves you money. One is going to be the reduction in your motor speed, and the other thing is your the motor that it houses. It houses a permanent magnet motor, which is roughly 30% more efficient than your single speed counterpart. So you can expect to, if you ran your variable speed pump at the exact same speed, which is 3450 RPMs, for the exact same amount of time as your single speed pump, you can expect to save roughly 30% just on that alone. So that's a really cool benefit without even having to address the RPM change. You're already saving money. But the science behind it is what they call the pool pump affinity law. What's that? Well, let me explain that. This is where all the magic happens. So the reason for the savings is because you reduce the motor speed, like I mentioned earlier. Even though you also reduce the flow rate, you're still cutting the power consumption drastically. And I have a couple charts on my website that show just that. So go to my website, chlorinekingpools.com, and underneath the variable speed pump section, go ahead and check that out for more information. The pool pump affinity law shows how all this is possible basically between three components. You got your motor speed, you got your flow rates, and lastly, you have your energy consumption. Most of the savings is from the reduction of the speed in the motor, but also some of it's contributed to the efficient permanent magnet motor, like I had mentioned before. Common sense tells us that if you cut the speed in half, you also cut the power in half. However, you'd be terribly mistaken according to this law. What actually happens is when you cut the speed in half, you also cut the flow rate in half, which makes sense, but that's where the similarities end. The power consumption actually drops at a different rate, which is scientifically known as nonlinear, than the other two. So in this example, if we were to actually lower the pool pump speed by half of what the full speed of the single pump would be, not only would we cut the flow rate in half, but we'd be using only an eighth of the original power used to power that single speed pump. How awesome is that? You can see that the lower you go, based off those charts on my website, the lower your power consumption. And again, this all equals money for you. Of course, you know, there's things you got to worry about, like equipment running at minimum speeds, like salt systems and heaters. They require a minimum amount of flow in order to have those work properly. So once you meet those required gallons per minute, you're golden. Anything above that is just wasted energy. So essentially, this all means savings for you. In order to do this, you need to install a pump. Which pump? I'm a huge fan of the Pentair IntelliFlow, mainly because they're Energy Star certified, and Pentair as a company actually won the Energy Star Partner of the Year award 4 years in a row. That's huge. No other company, Apple, Samsung, any of the big companies have not won that except for Pentair. So, you know, I'd put my money on the Pentair IntelliFlow and know that you're buying the highest quality piece of equipment that's going to save you the most money. So Jake, hopefully it helps you. If not, don't hesitate to reach out as always, and I'll be happy to walk this through you in greater detail. If you guys have any questions, comments, testimonials, don't hesitate to reach out. You can email me, you can call me, you can leave me a Facebook message, whatever you want to do. I'm here for you guys, so go ahead and reach out to me. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the main topic tonight, which is, again, the third segment of the chemical series, which is alkalinity tonight. I always like to say alkalinity is a close cousin to the pH. Oftentimes, you can correlate alkalinity to the pH. In other words, if the alkalinity is low, then oftentimes the pH is low and vice versa. It's not always true, of course, but it's a non-scientific guideline nonetheless that I use from time to time. Essentially, alkalinity measures all the alkaline substances in the pool water, things like carbonates, bicarbonates, things of that nature. According to the NSPF, a swimming pool should have somewhere in the range of 80 to 120 parts per million to be considered in range. I always tell my clients alkalinity is the guardian of the pH. It directly affects the pH greatly if it's not in range. What's it do, Eric? Well, if the alkalinity is low, then you'll get pH bounce, which means any little change in the water will drastically affect the pH. If the alkalinity is too high, then the pH will be resistant to change. In other words, in order to change the pH, it requires a lot more chemical, and of course the right application of said chemical, to make the adjustment in the alkalinity change. So you can see how the alkalinity really is a buffer to the pH. If your alkalinity is off, what can it do to your pool? When the total alkalinity is too low, like I said before, pH will become erratic, bouncing high or low, even after the smallest adjustment. Etching of the pool plaster or corrosion of chrome pool equipment will happen. Have you ever seen your stainless pool steps starting to get a lot of corrosion on it? That could be caused from a pool that's consistently low in alkalinity. Corrosive water conditions, which again can damage your pool and also your equipment. When the total alkalinity is too high, the pH becomes difficult to adjust. I don't like to say locked, which you'll hear sometimes, because that sounds permanent, you know, so I'll rarely ever say pH locked. You can also get cloudy water and scale formation on your pool equipment and inside your pool filters. Again, that affects the pH, and when the alkalinity is through the roof, the pH is going to be higher and it's going to be causing the solids to drop out of the solution, which means it's no longer suspended in the pool water. It's going to adhere itself to the pool surface or your equipment. You're also going to get decreased disinfectant efficacy because chlorine works better at a lower pH. So if the alkalinity is through the roof and the pH is high, the chlorine simply is not going to be effective. Also, either high or low, the alkalinity that is, can create swimmer discomfort in your eyes. A lower alkalinity could create a dry eye situation, whereas a high alkalinity could cause an itchy eye situation. So, if you got a swimmer complaining about that, look into alkalinity in conjunction to the pH. So, how do you adjust the alkalinity? Let's start if it's low. You can adjust it with sodium bicarbonate, which is also known as baking soda. A lot of pool professionals actually get bicarbonate soda ash mixed up. Soda ash actually has a greater effect on the pH than it does alkalinity, whereas bicarb, or baking soda for household terms, will affect the alkalinity more than will the pH. So obviously if you're trying to raise the pH, you don't want to use the sodium bicarbonate or the baking soda, whereas if you're trying to raise the alkalinity, you're not going to want to choose soda ash as your first chemical. So just make sure you're choosing the right chemical in your arsenal to make sure that you're getting the desired effect that you're looking for. So if we're going to use the bicarbonate to adjust the alkalinity, you can add 1.4 pounds or 1.5 pounds for easy numbers per 10,000 gallons of water to see a 10 part per million change. So if you need to raise your pool 20 parts per million and you have a 20,000 gallon pool, then you need 5.6 pounds to achieve that result. How do you apply the bicarb? Right through the skimmer. It's the best way to eliminate that snow cloud that you can create by broadcasting it. Yep, I've made that mistake before. Also, another tip for bicarb application. It doesn't dissolve very well in cold water. I actually doubled up on my mistake and broadcasted 5 pounds in the dead cold of winter. It was horrible. It took forever and several trips for me to clear it up. Never again will I make that mistake. I always put it in the skimmer now. Just a word of caution though, don't put 10 pounds of bicarb in there. It will cause your equipment to struggle. I don't add any more than 4 pounds per application. And if the filter's really small, it only gets 2 to 3 pounds at a time. Simple as that. If you need to lower the alkalinity, you can use muriatic acid for that. You can also use sodium bisulfate, also known as dry acid, but you have to worry about it sitting on the colored surfaces. So, you know, if it sits on a, you know, a PebbleTec pool, it's, you know, a dark black or dark blue, you know, and it doesn't dissolve by the time it gets to the floor, it could cause some discolorations because it's going to literally start eating away at that color. So I like to stick with white plaster pools if I'm using dry acid. But in all honesty, I've never used it. I like muriatic acid, simple to use, and don't have to worry about those things. So to get back to our 10,000 gallon dosing amount, generally speaking, most chemicals will have their dosing in 10,000 gallon pool increments and measures. So to get a 10 part per million change in 10,000 gallons of water, you need about 25.6 ounces of acid, or again, 25 ounces for round numbers. So if you need a 30 part per million change in 10,000 gallons of water, you need about 75 ounces, or if you're a visual person, just a little over half a gallon of acid. How do you apply it? Do you put it right in the skimmer? No, never in any circumstance pour acid in directly in the skimmer. You'll damage your equipment. What you want to do for alkalinity, you want to do it in the deep end, and you want to do it in one spot with the filter off. You also want to pre-dilute the acid too, so it doesn't settle in one spot full strength on the floor. Obviously, sometime more than likely it's going to dilute by the time it ever got to the floor, but acid's heavier than the water, so take that precaution to save your customer's pool service. Dilute it into a 5 gallon Home Depot bucket and be done with it. Always, I can't stress it enough, always add chemical to water and not the other way around. So to get back to application, pouring it in one spot in the deep end, that's, you might also hear the term slugging. That's synonymous with what we're doing here. You know, if you're trying to change the pH, you want to broadcast it around the perimeter of the pool, whereas with alkalinity, you want to put it in one spot. So there's a breakdown of alkalinity in a nutshell. I hope you guys learned a little bit. If you have any questions that I didn't answer here, please feel free to contact me. You're welcome to email me. You can text me. You can call me. You can send me a message through my website. You can contact on YouTube. Whatever avenue that you want to use, contact me. I am here for you guys. So stay tuned next week for another great episode. And as always, be safe and enjoy the pool. Have a great night, everyone.
That's all for tonight, and thanks for tuning in. Please send any comments or ideas, how-to and guest appearance requests, and product review suggestions to Eric@ChlorineKingPools.com. Remember, if life piddles in your pool of dreams, just add some chlorine and keep swimming. See you next time.